July 20, 2022, it's the Walt Frapino Show.
The main thing was trying to see how things were, you know, see how, we have a guy here who plays all together different, you know, you say, well, that's so-and-so, I know him anyway. Then you hear something else, say, well, that's so-and-so, I know him anyway. And then you sit down and maybe you can try to see where they both came from, you know, and you find maybe they came out of the same tree somewhere along the line. And, you know, so when I start looking at jazz like that, too, you know, at it collectively, looking at the whole thing. And then after Johnny Hodges, it was Miles, that was the next one. Oh, it was Jimmy Smith for about a couple of weeks before I went to Miles, the organist.
Yeah. He's tremendous.
Wow. I'd wake up in the middle of the night, man, hearing that organ. Yeah, man. Chords screaming at me.
You still work with Bud Powell?
I played with Bud. I never worked with him. I played one gig with him. Back in 1949, Miles used to get with dance jobs in the Audubon in New York, uptown, way up on Broadway. And I think on one of the jobs he had Sonny Rollins and Bud, Art Blakely, I forgot the bass man and myself, you know, on this dance job. I think that's the only time I've worked with Bud. He was playing, too.
For Pedro Show, happy Wednesday, brother Matt. How you doing?
Yeah, I'm great.
A little delay game, American League again.
Man, oh man!
Nobody can the Angels do this good. You were there, right?
Yeah, I've been there up the MLB All Star Week. I've been up there all week.
Okay.
Home run derby.
So was it disappointed or you just saw it coming?
You know, the National League seemed like they got that curse going. It started off strong.
Yeah.
Kershaw
right.
was awesome. And then
fade.
Kind of
the fade. Like at the
fade.
Track. Watch out for the guy who's.
Because
everybody drafts
strong.
On his ass.
Came out of the gate. Came out of the gate hard.
Yeah, but then everybody drafts you and saves on fuel, right?
Yeah.
Well,
but it's
like
fun.
Some motherfuckers, the way they drive on the freeway, drafting, you know, like a velodrome. Look, we start off the show with the. John Coltrane, Target August Blue in 1958, more about people he played with. And then we had the Muffs. But that's not for me. And I want to welcome aboard Walt Frapino Show, Brother Matt, joining us, fellow bass brother, via Brother Dale.
Yeah.
Bass brother Dale. Cruz. Ronnie Barnett. Did I get that right?
Yeah, Barnett. Yeah, we're not here to talk about the fucking Angels, are we?
I was getting all French on you, little Barnett.
yeah, Barnett. Yeah, I guess it is French. I don't know.
Yeah, because they like to cut the last letters off. It's kind of Cano. I wish I hadn't said it. But Ronnie Barnett, bass brother from the Power Trio tradition. It's just beautiful to have you aboard. And also bass brother Dale, who's was SoCal for many, many years, and now is ain't really NorCal. It's kind of in the middle. Santa Cruz.
Oh.
Yeah.
No, Sacramento.
Now he's Sacktown?
It's outside of Sacramento. I forgot the name of that town.
But you know, the year before he saw me in Cruz.
Yeah.
He made a commute to do that.
Yeah.
Okay. Anyway, he had to move because it said it cost too much to live here in SoCal. Well, it was like Highland Park, Mount Washington,
yeah,
or something
like that.
And it was just too much ducats. And
that's happening a lot. A lot of people are moving for that reason.
Actually, that is happening. But, you know, maybe with the internet and stuff, like artistic, creative people, they can telecommute.
Yeah.
Maybe.
True.
And you can live where the rent's econo, but still be where the work is happening because it's over the internet anyway.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Looking for solutions. The idea where we all got to either be in the city or New York or
options.
SoCal, I think that's kind of over.
Yeah, we got some new options.
Because the traffic thing, the rent thing, they're just the whole thing.
Yes.
Yeah, definitely.
Anyway, we're curious about your story. Truly. So please bring your first, earliest musical memory. Right.
Okay. It's more of an event thing. I was 5 years old.
In this world.
Yeah. Like it was 1970, and my family's best friends came to town with their five kids. We all got dressed up, me and my four brothers, and we were going to see Elvis Presley at the Astrodome. I'm from Houston, Texas, originally.
Okay. Right.
Yeah.
Lightning Hopkins.
Exactly, yes. I remember hearing ads, Lightning Hopkins playing at the Dome Shadow, you know, growing up. Like, he was just working clubs, which
was the Third Ward? I went to a place called the Silver Slipper, and they told me a lot of the gigs. You know what ward you were in?
I was like outside of town.
Because Houston's got this thing that's kind of like SoCal all spread out on the outside, but inside they have this old kind of fashion thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, now when I go back, the outside where I used to live is at the inside now. like it's, you know, it's all spread out. So I remember this, everybody's very excited. We go to the Astrodome and like Elvis comes on and like people are losing their minds. There's flash bulbs going off the whole show. So I just remember the event of it and you know, how excited everybody was.
Can I ask you this about the Astrodome? Because I actually caught the dude's pad. His pop built that thing. Was it sweaty?
No. You know what? Now that you mention it, I don't remember ever being uncomfortable, like hot in there.
Okay, because they ended up tearing it down, right?
No, it's still sitting there. They don't know what to do with it.
White Elephant Rock.
It's got the new stadium is like adjacent to it. It's one of those situations.
Right.
But
I drove past it a buttloads of times. I don't know what the fuck's wrong with me. Except
I never thought about that. No, they had good air conditioning. They had good air conditioning in that place. They had to figure it out.
Okay. the town was La Porte. You drive through Pasadena, not the Cali one, but the fucking 50 refinery one there in Houston, near Houston.
Yes, on your way to NASA.
So everybody's going crazy for the king.
Yes.
And you're foaming. Did you want to be him?
I just.
What about Gary Sheff? Was Gary Sheff on bass?
You know, probably so. I was five. It had to be those guys. It had to be James Burton, Jerry Sheff, and
Jimmy Burton.
You know, I don't know if Ron Tubb was
Jim Morrison. You know, Gary Sheff's on L.A. Woman, and
that's right.
Jim Morrison
right.
was all lit. The last guy to talk to him was the drummer man, Mr. Densmore, and he was all. He said, "Gary Sheff wants to tour with us." Jim was like, "Yeah."
Wow. and that didn't happen. Yeah,
he never even heard it mixed. He bailed.
Doors
right
was a real bass player. That would have been great on tour.
Yeah.
So cut to 2 years later. My mom takes me to see Elvis again. So I saw Elvis twice by the time I was seven. And again, I just remember I guess I was starting to take in music at that point, like just stuff. My parents listened to country music and like Neil Diamond and stuff. But my older brother listened to Black Sabbath and Alice Cooper. And I remember him telling me about Alice Cooper and like going to the show and stabbing the dead babies and stuff.
Oh yeah. Well, that song, right? Off Killer.
Yeah. He was laying it on real thick. So I thought it was all real. And I was scared. I was scared by
Killer,
the Paranoid album cover.
Killer was the electric chair because they get into a fight and then they execute him with a guillotine or a noose or some shit.
Yes.
Yeah.
So,
now, can I ask you, the pad you grew up, was there any musical instruments?
There was not. Yeah. It's weird. With four older brothers, none of them had a guitar laying around.
Okay. Then let me ask you this. In grade school, were you in the choir, marching band, or that kind of shit?
No. You know how I fell into it? I got into music probably like when I was like 9, a family friend gave me a bunch of Cream magazines.
Yes.
And there were probably hip parades and circuses in there too and stuff. But like
they're lame. But
I like
Richard Bangs, Richard Meltzer.
Yes. No. The rock criticism back then. I mean the writing.
Mr. Meltzer called it rock right. Right. And I think it was Mr. Christgau with like Dina Rock on a shirt. Mr. Meltzer.
Exactly.
Lots
yes,
of jokes
yes.
about that shit. What was the first
record?
No, I'm
a fan of all those guys. Yeah.
Ronnie, what was the first record you bought with your own money?
So 1972. I'm 7 years old. My parents give me some money. I wanted to go buy a Partridge Family record, but my that older brother who liked Alice Cooper brought me there, and he taught me to buy records he wanted. I walked out of there with Frank Zappa's Apostrophe and Cheech and Chong's Big Bamboo.
Is Apostrophe the Yellow Snow?
Yes. Okay. Yes.
And Big Bamboo, me and D. Boone committed that one to memory.
Yeah.
See, that's my baloney. Or listen to the Black Sabbath at 45, table candles, right? You pour wax on the table, light it on fire.
Yeah.
Okay, the first gig you saw live, was it that Elvis gig, or was there
it was those Elvis gigs. And like, starting at like 9 and 10, I was asking my parents, like, if I could go to shows. Like, I wanted to go see The Who in 75. No one would take me. They took me to see John Denver that year. You know what I mean? But the first show I went to that I wanted to go to was 76, age 11, Kiss. It was Kiss and Bob Seger. And my dad got some dude that worked for him to take me. And and we had good seats. It was like 15th row, middle of the floor.
Boone saw Kiss maybe 3-4 times before they even had an album out. They would open up for anybody. Wishbone yeah. Ash, Savoy Brown.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
No, they worked their asses off back then.
Oh, but, yeah. And the sign was light bulbs. It was
yes.
really little, yeah. And one of those kids, Gene Simmons' hair, caught fire. The roadie had to knock it out with a wet towel.
There are club gigs where they have the sign, like, on the side of the, like, on the ground, like, on the side of the stage, because they couldn't hang it.
I actually saw a Paul Stanley solo tour, the first one he did. Play Bogart's here.
Yes.
And he comes running from the limo into the pad, right? He's got 300 people holding up license plates and shit. And he's got his mouth, his cheeks are all puffed up like a fucking, chipmunk, squirrel thing. What happened, he gets on the stage, they're full of picks. He spits Paul Stanley picks all over the crowd. Course, it's raining men. It's raining. Paul.
I like that he ran in. Yeah, he went because that dressing room at Bogart's was like off to the next room, right? He wasn't going to walk.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah,
no,
yeah,
he
yeah,
ran
yeah.
from the limo into the. Yeah. You remember that? The Marina Pacifica Mall. I think Live Bait was the pad across the PCA.
That was a great club. Yeah, that was a great club, even though it was in a mini mall, right? Like that was.
I think it was a strip mall, more than a mini mall. There was Bar Winkles
right.
was next door. It was all this bullshit because Long Beach stays there, right? So you're servicing a certain lifestyle. Look, I want to play Blow Your Mind by the Muffs.
Yes.
When you're talking to me,
Talking in the spaces in between other people aren't saying, please stop talking.
Please stop talking. Please stop talking. Please stop talking. Please stop talking.
Stop talking.
Please stop talking.
Please stop talking.
Please stop talking.
Please stop
talking.
Please stop talking.
Please stop talking.
Please stop talking.
Please stop talking.
Please stop talking.
Thank you. l'Alliance annulant la différence en embrassant les hirondelles sur elle, ma belle m'appelle.
通过亲吻他上的燕子来消除差异的联盟我美丽的呼唤我
Speedrow show, that chunk of music, it started off the Muffs doing Blow Your Mind. Then Brian New from Sawako Kosei Komatsu Nightbeam. Mark Stewart, singer of the pop group, did a collab with some Italianos. L'Impretanto, Mark Stewart, with Naked Safari. After that, the Killers, name of the song, not the New Wave Band. Bob Pollard, of course, it's every other month. It must be time for a new Bob Pollard reference. This guy, he puts them out. Jesus, he cranks it out. It's like, if you got a chow, you got to take a dump. So he gets a thought, he's got to make a record, right? Okay. And XV, some ladies from back east, was starting over. Please stop talking. Cube with Commercial for Nicotine. What other kind are they? Noisuka with Hirondelle's One. We'll hear next show, Hirondelle's Number Two. Plus Dog Plus with The Shadow of Absence. Ratchet Orchestra out of Quebec with Bongo Island, hence the bongos. Equations Collected with Helicon Sessions Cut 2.2 Part 2. I don't know where Part 1 is. Niagara, or like my Sonia de Marinaio bandmates say, Niagara. I tried to tell them it was a native word. Calor, Harisama Sima with Involuto and Cellulosa. I can butcher that language. Northern Jaw, brand new. Madness is a hard thing to define. Paranoid State from Holland with the Great Divider. Speaking of that asshole, he's got his little fucking mouse in there doing a little show thing today, right? And then finally, On and On. Not Watt, but the Muffs. Back to Ronnie Barnett with his journey through music. Okay, so you get some records for your brother via you. And somehow you end up on...
He took the rolling paper out of that Cheech and Chong record, too. He took that rolling paper out of there.
Well, I think on the record they end up... Because they can't find any mota, so they use some socks.
Yes.
Okay. We don't want to try that.
Sorry.
But we did try the banana peel thing. That shit and cream, some cabbage they would sell over the mail. Anyway, how did you end up on bass, Ronnie?
Yeah, what happened was... So I became a fan of music, and I started hanging out at the local record store. So I started sweeping up for promos and stuff. This is like when I was like 14, 15, and I became friends with a manager, and he played bass. And because, you know, kids don't ask for basses, right? Like that, you
they
want,
do
they
these
want to play
days. They didn't they those do days, days, but yeah. They do these days.
Not in those days. They want, you know, they ask for guitars or drums or you know, whatever.
Guys who wanted gigs because everybody else was playing guitar, right?
Yeah. So this guy, and he'd give me all the, anything punk or new wave, he hated, so he would give me all that stuff. But it was, you know, being in Houston, there's that strong blues thing happening, right? You mentioned like the Hopkins stuff. So he was a blues guy.
There's a
so,
strong Jandek thing in the Montrose part.
Yeah, you know, I was not hip to Jandek. I moved here in 89. I was not hip to Jandek when I lived.
I got to two, he picked me for two gigs.
Wow.
Hey, he didn't call himself Jandek. Right? He called himself the representative from Corwood Industries.
Yes, okay. Corwood Industries, of course. This guy had a bass. He had a Fender Precision, and I asked my parents for a bass. And so 1978, they gave me – I got a Fender Precision. It's Antigua. And it remained my bass through my whole musical career. Like,
what about amp?
My first amp was a Lab Series.
Oh, man, I remember. You know who liked Lab? Was B.B. King.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because they were guitar amps, mainly.
Yeah, no, the only other guy, the guitar player from King's X, played a Lab Series.
Doug Pinnick.
The guitar player, Ty Tabor.
Oh, okay, because Doug Pinnick.
I don't know Doug, but yeah.
Doug Pinnick, hell of a bass man and a great singer.
Oh, my God.
And a great
singer. Oh, incredible. No, I saw King's X early, you know, being from Houston. Seeing them in a club with that sound coming out of nowhere, it was unbelievable. Like, you know. But, yeah, Doug, incredible.
So, you get a bass. Do you go for lessons, or do you just try to learn stuff off records?
Yeah, so my parents set me up with lessons, and I got one lesson, and then the teacher goes, you know, you should get him a guitar. Like, tried to switch me off the bass to the guitar. They got me an acoustic guitar, and I actually took like two lessons, but I really didn't take to it. And shortly thereafter, I in that same record store, I ran into history teacher at my high school. So I'm like going my sophomore year at this point. So I meet this history teacher, and he was known as like kind of the punk, you know, singer, teacher, whatever.
Yeah.
You know? And I met him, and we hit it off, and he's like, you got a bass? Why don't we play? And so him and his brother took me under their wing and taught me how to play the bass and got me in a band, and that's how I learned. Like, so the lessons were out the window, and I just...
Wow, talk about teacher-student relationship.
Yes, yes. So, like, yeah. So, the first...
Brother Matt did years of teaching.
Yeah,
I don't know if any dudes in a band, but he helped a lot of cats through, but... Yeah, there's a skill to being a teacher. Sometimes you got to go and get in through that. Get in through the bass.
But no, and that was the best way to learn, man, because I, like, that's how I don't know, I had some kind of feel or whatever.
Did you guys do gigs?
We did, but they were all, like, school-related. Like, so my first gig is my sophomore talent show, right? And, like, I wore, like, a suit. We did, like, a Gang of Four song. We did a Wyatt. We did Mannequin.
Gang of Four by Wyatt.
Like, this was radical at the high school, right? We did Mannequin by Wire.
First album, Pink Flag.
Yeah, and the other band was doing like 38 Special, the other band on the bill, you know what I mean?
Ronnie, that bass part in Mannequin, it starts with a dong, do, dong.
Yes.
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 Kind of a chord progression, but
I could pick that up, right? That wasn't like too busy or whatever.
No, but it has all those good little fill-in ramp-ins and ramp-outs. Boom, 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 boom. Spice. Did you guys do the accent?
He did do the accent.
Like
he
Green Day style.
And I got to sing the You're a Disgrace part in the middle.
Disgrace. Tell me.
Yeah.
So was that gig a success or a failure?
Yeah, you know, we did all right. And then we did like a school dance. Like I said, you know, the school wasn't ready to really embrace that kind of shit. Like, we also did like All Day and All the Night or whatever, you know, and Who covers or whatever. Yeah, but, yeah. You know, but then I was in that band for like, you know, a year and a half, and then I joined the rival high school band, and that was a band that was doing keggers, and we were playing Loverboy songs and stuff. but we were like,
the singer now weighs 500 pounds. They call it Loverboy, right?
I shared
the same product manager at Columbia, and he points to the thing on the bulkhead, you know, the gold thing. You know, hey, Watt, this lasted 2 years.
that was a great thing about being on a major label, right? All that kind of shit. Like following, like working with a person who worked with Van Halen on something before you. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I was with them 14 years, but my thing was kind of like an SST thing, so it was way different than those. But they would always laugh. They kind of, I don't really have horror stories from there because they kind of like the autonomy thing.
they wanted me to give
seminars for the new bands because these motherfuckers wanted the puppet strings tied to their wrists and ankles.
Right. Well, they signed you knowing who you were and what you were going to do, what you're going to do.
Yeah, I did
11
years of SST before that.
Yeah, yeah.
So, look, you got to tell me the name of that band with the teacher and his brother.
We were named after a Wire song. We were called Blessed State.
Oh, wow. Blessed State.
Yeah. Heavily into Wire.
Wow. First three albums.
Yeah. And then the other band that played the commercial
Rival.
Stuff. Yeah. That was The Distractions with a Y.
Of course.
D-Y-S. Yeah. But the guitar player could play with his teeth and stuff. Like, we would kill at these keggers.
What was that Hollywood band? Easy Enough, and it was all like that. Like, you have to have it phonetic, right? Because fuck, you know, English.
Yes, yeah, exactly. Exactly. Or putting the apostrophe in there, like Guns N' Roses.
Tons of poses. All right. It was Alice in Chains. I remember pictures, they're wearing machine gun bullet belts and shit.
They were glammy.
Of course, but you know, you, there's something in the air, right? So you know, like Mick Mars, what do you need? Fog hat? I can just imagine Mick Mars at the tryout, right? What do you need? Bell bottoms? What do you need? Platform? Look, we're at the end of the first hour, July 2022 edition of Watt Pedro Show. Special guest Ronnie Barnett. Hold tight for hour two.
I did.
July 2022. It's the second hour of Watt Pedro Show.
I'm a dick, I'm a dickie, I could care less. Thank you.
Well, for preview show, we start the second hour. The Muffs, not Offs. Remember Offs? He was from the city, huh? Kind of got into reggae. Dave Vinyl. I think Junk killed him. Fuck. Anyway, the Muffs with the I'm a Dick. Then Ben Salter out of Tasmania with Lech. I think he spelled it wrong, but that's okay. Trobokova Kustepeshi. This is a Slovenia band. Well, these days, this is 1983, so it's still Yugoslavia. And they're playing in Zagreb, which is now Croatia. Muziki Benali. And a tune called Nikad Robom, which translated, thank you, never a slave. But always a Slav. I wonder if there's that cognate is connected somehow. It's because somebody told me Welsh meant slave. Oh. That's why Welsh guys never call each other Welsh. Yeah, because in England for them. Michael Vega and Imbernaum with Idyllic Tragic Assembly, a film phenomenal out of North Carolina. He put out these four CDs full of him on the stand up bass. That Vacation Friend. Shivel Board after that. Julie Schooley. Very clever. Head Cut, Cold Shoulder, Ray Shin, Commuter, and the Must finally with Big Mouth. Okay. So, after the interesting pronunciation, phonetic spelling ban, you end up leaving Houston and come to SoCal?
Yeah. So after those
high school... What motivated that?
You know what it was? So after high school, I put down the... I wasn't in a band for a while. Like, I put down the bass. I always thought, like, if I end up in something, I'll do it. But, you know, I wasn't going to scour ads and try to meet people and stuff. So what happened was I became a journalist. I wrote for the weekly Houston paper, and I thought that's what I would do. Because I was like, I get to get insurance free.
I think that weekly ended up running the big festival there.
It was called Public News. Yeah. I mean, I probably wrote about you in there.
It was like a big old house.
Fitzgerald's,
yeah.
Love that place. They tore that house down. I got a piece of the floor in.
Yeah, I heard about it. I played one of the last gigs there. And I think those people own the White Oak or something.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that house only stood for like 100 years before they tore it down and made a parking lot out of it. Yeah.
And there was another little pad right near it. A little roadhouse thing, I remember.
Rudyard's. I mean, there were a few.
Rudyard's was in Montrose, and I think that's still there. You play upstairs. Yeah, but there was something right on the same street as Fitzgerald's, a little pad I played once, because a gig got rained out. The thing about Houston is they did all these underpasses instead of overpasses, so when it rains, they all fill up, the cars start floating.
Yeah,
Fitzgerald's came to the rescue. So how long did you write for me? So that means you went to gigs and like did gig reviews and record reviews?
Yeah, I did gig reviews and I you know, got to
so
talk.
So you ended up like Lester Bangs and Richard Meltzer.
Yes, exactly.
My right.
And I'd interview Sonic Youth and Buck Owens and you know, I did whatever I wanted. It was great. I write about Slayer and, you know, whatever. And I thought I would do that. And what happened was I had met Kim, she came through in 86 with the Pandora as her former band.
Right.
And we met and kind of hit it off as friends. It wasn't romantic. And my brother lived in Costa Mesa out here.
Orange County.
So 2 months later, I came out and spent a month in Costa Mesa. I actually saw the second Fire Hose gig, Mike, at Safari Sam's when I was out here on that trip.
I remember that. That's when... Because for a little while, Sam had a place up in Hollywood, but that was one of the last things there. It was by the Golden Bear.
I missed out on the Golden Bear. But yeah, I remember I was very excited to catch that gig.
Last Cat Beefheart gig was at the Golden Bear.
Oh, man, I love that place.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Yeah. We stayed friends over the next 3 years. And in 89, she came through town again. And I did the same thing. I came out to Costa Mesa, spent a month, and that's when it became romantic. So we became a couple. I moved out here. I dropped all the shit I was doing in Houston, which was writing and, you know, working at a record store, and moved here for love. And me and Kim we went out for like 3.5 years. And so that's how I ended up, forming our band.
But at the same time, she was still helping the Pandoras, right?
No, she was still in the Pandoras, but they had gone like heavy metal. We mentioned heavy metal.
That change. Yeah.
Yeah, and it really, you know, they kind of lost their original audience, and they didn't really gain a heavy metal audience. And
then the singer had an aneurysm in the shower or something, right?
Yeah, that was a That was after Kim had left the band. But
yeah, that's right. That's
yeah,
right.
No,
that's
at age like 31.
In fact,
I mean, yeah,
they had another bass player, too, in the meantime.
Yeah, they did a gig with, like, a dude on bass, a guy
that's
from a
right,
band.
That's right, that's
a
right.
A band called Taz, one of those Bam Magazine metal bands.
Right. Remember Bam, Brother Matt?
Yeah, yeah.
I think it meant Bay Area Music.
Yeah.
Yes, yes. But right before the Muffs, the Lazy Cowgirls rhythm section quit.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I tried out for the Lazy Cowgirls.
Was Bob Lee in that version?
No,
okay.
No, but I know Bob.
Because
yeah,
he
yeah,
ended
no,
up helping the Lazy Cowgirls. I think they were Indiana cats that moved here.
They were, and their rhythm section quit like on tour, like they flew home.
That's real classy.
Yeah, no shit, right? Leave the other two guys. Yeah,
fucking dicks. Talk about being a dick.
Yeah, so I picked up the bass again. I'm like. And
okay,
love,
so you ain't
I
played
love.
Since those fucking school days, okay?
Exactly.
Did it come
exactly.
back quick?
It did come back quick. It did. I mean, you know, I'm like a feel kind of bass player, right? Like I'm not playing a bunch of fancy stuff.
That's okay.
Yeah, I like to be in the pocket. I you know, so you know,
James
rock
Jamerson.
And roll.
Dusty,
yes.
Talk about Houston, who played with Lightning Hopkins, Dusty Hill.
Yes.
And he asked Lightning, man, I can't figure the changes. And Lightning said, Lightning changes when Lightning wants to change.
Yeah, no, look at Dusty Hill. That kind of stuff is the biggest influence.
I love
on me,
that cat,
back.
Man. I got to meet him. His fingers were like 10 thumbs.
Yes. No, you could tell those photos and stuff.
And he was bad. He was solid. He was beautiful. So was Frank and Billy. But you know,
absolutely.
Trace Ombres and Fandango was big on us, Minutemen.
My first memory of smoking pot is age 11 at ZZ Top in 76. The tour where they had the Texas stage and the livestock.
Pink cowboy hat.
Yeah.
I just love opening Trace Ombres in that big Mexican show. We would just
stare at
that
motherfucker. Yes.
We didn't have anybody. We just looked at it.
I used to go to that restaurant. I wish I would have ordered that meal. But yeah.
Oh, yeah. right. So, okay, and you're also inspired to get on the bass because what? You're writing songs with Kim?
Yeah, no, I didn't write. Kim wrote the songs. Like, so
what,
Kim,
she would bring them to you, and then you'd write bass parts, or would she write your parts too?
Yeah, no, we would work them out as a band, and then you know, and then she started doing demos. I mean, they're pop songs, you could tell, like you know, so we weren't jamming, you know, like.
And who was on the drums?
So originally we had this guy named Chris Crass, who was from Seattle, and he was a little older than us, but he was really, you know, he was a really good drummer, and, you know, he worked for a while. I always say, you know, he was always almost out of the band the whole time he was in the band, right? He was kind of
probation.
He was kind of a difficult personality, right? He's a little different than us.
Orson Welles said, an unfortunate personality.
We solidified in 94 as the trio with Roy McDonald on drums. Roy was in Red Cross,
before that.
Yeah, so, we knew Roy. We actually asked Roy to be in the band when we first formed, and he was like,
but he wasn't a McDonald brother.
No, but they used to lie in interviews and say that he was sometimes. Yeah. Like, so people still think that, but yeah, not a McDonald brother. But
okay, can you remember the first gig you did with Kim?
Yeah, I do. It was. I remember the date too, January 25th, 1991, at the Shamrock.
Shamrock, I remember that.
Yes,
it was kind of like. Silver Lake, right? Or on the border with Hollywood.
On the border. It became that strip club, Cheetahs, which it still
That's
is.
Right.
Yeah, right where Sunset and Hollywood kind of meet, right around there, yeah.
Actually, Sunset and Hollywood cross.
Yes. That freaked me out when I moved to L.A. It's like, wait, those two streets cross? Wilshire and Santa Monica cross? Like, it takes a while to figure this town out, man. But,
and then you find out that Sunset is actually the end part of Route 66. Yeah. That's how you got from Chi-Town to SoCal in the old days before Interstate. Do you remember the first song that you wrote with Kim?
Again, I didn't really write. She did throw me a songwriting credit.
The first one she threw you.
Yeah, like a feel at fucking Marineland. It's a song called I Need You, and I help with the arrangement. It's like a garagey kind of riff number, like, you know, the bass line is like, dong, 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 dong.
Like Chess Taylor, real strong.
Yeah, and, you know, it's garagey, she does her screaming thing.
When you hear the
it.
Animals, like, we gotta get out of that place, get out of this place, that bass is so, man, the English producers were not afraid to put the bass up loud in the rock and roll, 60s rock and roll.
No, thank God.
Loved it.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, so that Shamrock gig, was that a success?
You know, it was. You know, we had a lot of friends, right? So you know how, or maybe you don't. Your first gig, all the friends come out, right?
Yeah, of course.
So you know, Danita was
there. The only ones.
Yeah. No. So the Paula from the Pandoras was there, and Danita from L7, and the McDonald Brothers, and, you know, all our friends, and then second gig was at the Gaslight. Nobody there.
We call those character builders. That's behind the Ivar, where Duce used to be a MC. You know, I just remembered Shamrock is where Dave Markey filmed Firehose doing a video for Mannequin. It's all connected, right? It's all fucking connected.
And Dave Markey did our first major label video for a song called Lucky Guy. How about that?
Lucky Guy, I remember that. Oh, fuck.
Yeah.
Okay. Look, it's time, Brother Matt, Spin Cycle, but we're going to get right back to you.
Got a song here for Ronnie's brother.
Dreamed I was an Eskimo. Began to blow. Under my boots and around my toes. Frost that bit the ground below. It was 100 degrees below zero. My mama cried. And my mama cried.
Don't be a naughty Eskimo.
Save your money, don't go to the show. Well, I turned around and I said,
watch out where the huskies go, don't you eat that yellow snow.
Watch out where the huskies go, don't you eat that yellow snow. Well, right about that time, people, a fur trapper who was strictly from commercial had the unmitigated audacity to jump up from behind my igloo. And he started into whipping on my favorite baby seal with a lead-filled snowshoe. I said, with a lead-filled
snowshoe.
He said, peek-a-boo, with a lead-filled
snowshoe.
He said, peek-a-boo. He went right upside the head of my favorite baby seal. He went whap with a lead-filled snowshoe. And he hit him on the nose and he hit him on the fin. And he that got me just about as evil as an Eskimo boy can be. So I bent down and I reached down and I scooped down and I gathered up a generous mitten full of the deadly
yellow snow.
The deadly yellow snow from right there where the huskies go. Whereupon I proceeded to take that mitten full of the deadly yellow snow crystals and rub it all into his beady little eyes with a vigorous circular motion hitherto unknown to the people in this area, but destined to take the place of the mud shark in your mythology. Here it goes now, the circular motion. Rub it. then in a fit of anger, I pounced. And I pounced again. Great googly moogly. I jumped up and down the chest of a... very upset, as you can understand. And rightly so, because the deadly yellow snow crystals had deprived him of his sight. And he stood up, and he looked around, and he said, I can't see. I can't see. The husky wee wee, I mean the doggy wee wee, has blinded me, and I can't see temporarily. Well, the fur trapper stood there with his arms outstretched across the frozen white wasteland, trying to figure out what he's going to do about his deflicted eye. And it was at that precise moment that he remembered an ancient Eskimo legend wherein it is written, on whatever it is that they write it on up there, that if anything bad ever happens to your eyes as a result of some sort of conflict with anyone named Nanook, the only way you can get it fixed up is to go trudging across the tundra, mile after mile. Trudging across the tundra. Right down to the parish of St. Alfonso.
I'm not ready to go. I'm not ready to go. I'm not ready to go. of iniquity. Try.
session has been spun.
Brother Matt, please enlighten us.
Well,
what you were bringing with that dose of spin cyclage.
It all started because of Ronnie's brother.
Yeah.
And his...
he set you off.
Yeah, commandeering him to get that Apostrophe album by Frank yep. Zappa. So I hadn't dusted that off in a long time. Had some Wire in there.
Yep.
And Toys That Kill.
Yep.
And wrapped it up with, we also had the...
They opened up for the Pine Hill Haints last night at the Dean.
How bitchin' that sounded. Had some Get Down Moses
yep.
and Very Be Careful wrapping it
That's
up.
That's right.
Remember those guys?
Yeah. Valentino Cumbria from Colombia. Yeah.
Bitchin'.
Yep. And in fact, 2 weeks ago, played the Blipsy Bacara up in K-Town. It was a great gig. Probably the best gig we've done there.
Wow, cool.
Tom Watson was on fire.
Bitchin'.
And he's healing up from his sickness and... Back in action, I think, Alex's Bar this Sunday.
Oh, awesome.
Like 5:15 or something. Yeah,
cool.
It's an early show. Big man. He's Booker Man there.
Yeah, yeah. Right on, Nick.
And cool. Then a month, no, 3 weeks, I'm there again with Flipper.
Oh, man.
As a power trio.
Wow, righteous.
That's going to be 2 weeks from this Saturday.
Oh, man, cool.
Right? I think that's
the 30th or something?
August
29th, 30th.
The 5th.
Oh, cool, cool.
Brother Matt, thank you so much for bringing that spin cyclage. Can't wait. For next week.
Right on.
Been hour two of the July 2022 Dish to Watt Peter Show special guest Ronnie Barnett. Hold tight, 5-3. July 2022. It's the third hour of the Watt for Peter Show.
I believe in you, why? You think I'm a mess? Maybe someday without you're gone. When I do as I please, I'm a giving to me. Am I crazy or have good luck? Yeah.
have to stop with Ryan and dream I'm alone. And I wake up sucking lemons. Distracted by it all, you think you have to die before you go to heaven. Beauty, it is found on earth. Sublime beauty, it is found. I'm partaking of the pleasantries, what are you saving it for? This thing will last forever. I'm picking up flowers now, and I'm going to dance around, happy for everything we have in common. Finished the previous list of calls, and I wrote another list. I won't have another miss. No more waking, sucking lemons. Beauty, it is found on earth. Sublime beauty, it is found. If I'm going to shake a bone, then throw away from me. She made me quiet with a look. She sharpened up with time. In the dream I am alone. I wake up sucking lemons. Partaking of the pleasantries, what are you saving it for? Who are those mountains for? Why is the sky and universe so bad? Why are the stars so pretty?
Show start off the third hour with Muff doing Sad Tamara, then Another Umbrella, Richard Derrick, Eternal Flame,
yeah.
Rubber O Cement with music from Music Critics. That's for you, Ronnie. Cameron, Horn, Hacker, Flatten, Thompson with How About Never, Diane Marie Kloba with Sucking Lemons, and finally the Muffs to That Funny Place. So what about touring? Muffs.
Yeah. Yeah, no, we started touring, like, even right out of the gate. We were five
months. Oh, I remember, but I wanted to hear you say it.
Yeah, no, we built the tour up to the to Seattle and Vancouver when we were 5 months old, like in
I-5 tour.
Yeah, though we skipped San Francisco and Sacramento and shit. I don't know what we were thinking. Even Portland.
That's because it's off I-80.
Yeah, we just did Seattle and Vancouver. Yeah. So yeah, we
then what
we
kind started, of van you got? What kind of van you had, Ronnie?
We had Chris the drummer. He had ties in Seattle, so it was like. It was opening for somebody. You know, we might have done Eugene, too.
No, what kind of van?
Kind of van? I'm sorry. Yeah, we rented a van. We never owned a van.
Wow!
Yeah.
All that touring and you never owned one.
Nope, we always rented. Yeah,
probably with that rental money, you could have bought one.
No shit, right? We were not big thinkers in that respect. Yeah, we didn't.
It's all right.
We spent the money, yeah. We got hotel rooms, you know what I mean? We didn't sleep on floors. I you know.
There's air mattresses now. I wish we had them 40 years ago. You can sleep on fucking rocks now with these motherfuckers. Let me tell you. And so right out of the gate, you're torn. And then you get courted by the big label, right?
Yeah. Like, it was about 9 months after that first show at the Shamrock. And we had just recorded. We recorded our first two singles at the same time. One was going to come out on Sympathy for the Record Industry and one on A Go Go. Long Gone John. And A Go Go.
He's got the fucking Raw Power Iggy jacket.
He does. It's he does. Plastic. Yeah. Didn't Stan Lee trade it to him?
Yeah, because Iggy sold it to Stan Lee for dope.
Yes.
Stan Lee sold it for more, but still for dope.
Yeah. Well, at least it's not going to.
It's kind of repurposed.
It's kind of a good story in a way. Yeah.
So you made a single for Long Gone.
So yeah, we record these singles, but then Warner Brothers finds us, right? Like our A&R guy, he had gone to the Coconut Teaser to see Trash Can School, but he walked out wanting to sign us.
I remember the teaser on Crescent Heights.
Oh God, yeah, free hot dogs and the
silver spray paint and sawdust.
10 bands. Yeah.
Me and Raymond saw a. Arthur Lee there, he didn't get one song out. Somebody gave him shrooms and he couldn't get it together. Drummers threw sticks at him and ran out of the club.
Yeah, Arthur's a real thing, right?
Yeah, a real thing. So Warner Brothers, they really dig you at the teaser, huh?
Yeah. So what happened? Like, we didn't have any business people at this point still. Like, so we're talking to Warner Brothers. We didn't have a manager or any of that stuff. We didn't even have a demo tape, so they signed us to a demo deal. Because the singles weren't going to cut it as far as a major label demo, right? So we signed a demo deal, went to Sound City, recorded next to Ginger Baker and the Masters of Reality.
Oh, I remember when he was playing with them. Yeah.
Yeah. At Sound City, and we did a demo. We did a demo, and we got signed. And in the meantime, Sub Pop wanted to do a single, so we were technically signed to Warner Brothers, but they let us do the Sub Pop single, and
For militant street cred.
Yeah, exactly. I'm not sure if that
Remember
worked or
perception
not.
Perception is 9/10 of the law. Yeah, now but, your major label experience, Nightmare or?
No, okay. It's kind of like you said. We had a great time. They let us do what we wanted. Like our first album has 16 songs, got an Angry Samoans cover on it.
Right.
You know what I mean? We made it with our two A&R guys, one of which is Rob Cavallo, who became a big producer afterwards. Sure. Because the next band he signed was a band called Green Day, right? Then they made Dookie.
Little
tiny
band, yeah.
Yeah, a little tiny band. So no, they let us do what we want. Like I said, we got to hire Dave Markey to do our video and for better or worse.
Not enough people hear that because they weren't all Nightmares. If you held on to your autonomy and your integrity. But these clowns that cry about it, nobody sees what they were trying to become fake royalty.
Yeah.
No, I don't want to get all know-it-all on the shit, but, man, I saw a lot of this duplicit behavior.
Well, it's all who you work with, right? It's whatever A&R guy. If you get an A&R guy that thinks he's, like, a fucking the boss of the thing and, you know, he wants to hear more demos or wants to hear hits or whatever. You know, like, we never encountered that, you know, for better or worse.
The funniest one is he wants to take you to dinner when you're actually taking him to dinner.
Yeah. That's true. We didn't know that at the time either.
It's called recoupable.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like, oh, these meals in the studio, these are good meals. Hey, the way I look at it, it's not, you're not going to earn that money unless you're selling billions of records anyway.
Absolutely,
so you may as well spend that money.
Oh, no, the records are flyers for gigs.
Exactly, yeah.
So, now you end up leaving the band.
No. I was in the band the whole time. Me and Kim were the two that were in the band from beginning to end.
Okay, so you never left.
I never left. They did one gig without me. It's because I had an eye surgery and I had a air bubble in my eye and I couldn't fly.
You are forgiven.
Yeah, so thank you. So, yeah, that friend filled in. Yeah, so I don't think nobody noticed, probably, you know. So,
was it the guy from Taz?
Yeah, I made him cut his hair, but yeah,
Great.
This is the most anybody's talked about Taz in years, right?
Yeah, right, absolutely. So, how's the evolution? How's the arc of the band?
Yeah, so we had three major labels. We were on Warner Brothers' first album, switched to Reprise because of Green Day for the second and third records. Well, by the time the third record came out, a month after it came out, we knew we were going to get dropped. Though they still gave us tour support, we still went on tour. And then we signed with Fat Mike at Fat Records.
Okay, NoFX.
Like we kind of just kept going. You know how it is. You just keep going, and you're not even really thinking about career direction or whatever, right? So
we
signed to Fat Records. They gave us a decent budget. We made the next record, and then it came out on their power pop imprint, Honest Don's, because we never heard this at the major label. Like, he's like, I thought you were gonna make a fast record. It's like, have you heard our records? Like, we're not a punk band.
He has this weird idea about bands part of the movement had to have a certain kind of sound. I remember him giving me this lecture about what is art and what is punk, and, you know.
Yeah. No, he was cool.
I was thinking of that farmer who knows he's going to grow a good crop because he's using a lot of manure.
Yeah. No, I think he thought because we were on Fat Records, we'd make this, like, really punk record or whatever.
I have heard his rap. He's a nice guy. I really like Eric Melvin. He's a beautiful man.
Oh, me too, yeah.
But Mike's got this weird idea about the movement being so confined and orthodox and part of this labeling thing that – I thought we got, well, basically it was to get away from arena rock, but also labels and genre and all that shit.
Yeah,
punk is
yeah.
a guy who gets fucked in jail for cigarettes. What kind of music is it?
That's right.
It's fast. It can be slow.
It still means that, yeah.
Scott Tatsmere told me once about hearing his guy yelling and crying the whole night. Yeah, he was in the drunk set. Yeah. Yeah, Mike, Fat Mike and his semantics. Okay. So after the Fat Records record?
Yeah. So after the Fat Records thing, we kind of we broke with our manager. That's when we started. That's when we kind of ended up on our own and no manager. We kind of took a little break of sorts. It wasn't planned, but we, you know, after working continuously for you know 10 years or whatever, we naturally just kind of took a. Now during this break, we still toured. We still went to different countries. We did the Warped Tour. We still did stuff, but you know, people mark time by record releases, right? So,
So
on paper, there were 5 years, you know, that went by. But yeah, so we made our next record really, really happy and came out in 2004. Came out on a label called 5 Foot Two that Anna Warnker. And Sean
Her daddy was at Warner Brothers.
Yeah. Her dad, we worked with him there.
Great cat. Mo Austin and,
all those guys are
Bob
great.
Bob Krasnow. Yeah, those three cats at Warner Brothers were suits that weren't like suits.
No, we were there in 95 when all those people left, and, like, it was a huge deal. Like you tried to pretend at the time that it wasn't a big deal, but it was a really big deal.
Well,
and, like,
I can believe it. All Ray these Warner people, a great drummer man, too.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So Anna and Charlotte Caffey, they had a label, and they put out our record. And
right.
You know,
speaking of the McDonald Brothers.
Exactly. We're cross-pollinated with Red Cross our whole career, right? So, so we did it. We got in the van again, did a tour for that record. And then just for whatever reason, 3 years went by where we just you know, Kim got married. Roy got married. Just, I don't know. Kim started just trying to do, write songs for commercials or whatever. None ever sold or whatever. We just kind of decompressed there. And then we got back together because we started getting offered. We got an offer to go to Spain. So we never really broke up. We stayed friends, but we got back together and just started going places. And, by that time we're established, and you figure out if you're established, you don't need a record to tour behind, right? Like, you can just go on the road.
Yeah.
Like, that's what Loverboy does, right? Like, so
that's what they did in vaudeville. You had to work the room.
Yeah. So, you know, we were lucky enough to have a rep at that point. So we did that, and then we started slowly making a record, and we put together this. And so 10 years went by between record releases, but we did do shit during all that time. And then in that 10 years too, Kim joined the Pixies for like a year.
Yeah, that was sad, right? They threw her out for pogoing.
Yeah, well, that was the story. Like, she did stage dive, and they had a manager that would like come down on her and stuff. And look, Black Francis gets the rap, but Kim was his pick.
I know Charlie. He's a great cat. Actually,
he's great.
He grew up in Torrance. He's from Harbor City, right near Pedro.
That's right, South Bay. Yeah, no, he was great.
College in West Mass. He lives there now, but he's actually from here.
So the friction was between the other guys in the band. And the manager, right? So, yeah, they threw her out. You know, it seemed like she's only been in the band 4 months, but she was in the band like 8 months before they announced it, right? She learned 60 songs. And, 62. Yeah. So,
and then, so, yeah. And then we put up our record. We got to talk about this a little bit, Ronnie, but
yeah.
We lost Kim to a horrible disease.
Yeah. So Kim passed away from ALS. She had it for like 2 years, wasn't public about it. And it's just the most heartbreaking thing that can happen to someone you love, right? But she kept a good attitude, man. She had a device that would read her eyeball that could talk for her. So like the machine would say like, your girlfriend's got a hairy pussy and you know, stuff like that. She'd smile. She could still smile. You know what I mean?
Did you guys make a record during that time?
Yeah. So we were assembling a record when she got sick, right? And so she had these rough demos, and when she couldn't play guitar or sing anymore, we made the decision to kind of flesh out these demos. And I compare it to Madcap Laughs, because we kind of had to adhere to like, yes, because we had to adhere to like weird timing sometimes, and you know, there were off, you know, out of key guitars and stuff, but she oversaw the production of this record, and we, yeah, some songs we had left over. We had a couple songs left over from last record, but we, for the most part, they were songs that were going to be on our next record. They're just in like kind of rough form, and we were gonna put it out. Like, she was still around when it was like finished and had a release date, and you know, we were gonna put it out and just kind of say like, you know, we like to feel these demos, you know. But yeah, it's a miracle. We finished this record and actually came out good. So it really is a miracle.
Look,
so.
I want to play Don't Pick on Me.
Don't pick on me. Don't pick on me. heroin were music and lyrics, Lou Reed.
Watt from Pedro Show. Last music for this edition. The Muffs start off that chunk of music with Don't Pick on Me. Then just released was the demo Lou Reed did for Heroin in 1965. And the guitar part is so much different, but the words are the same. Most of them. Jeff Kimmel was live at ESS. And finally, Take a Take Me, the Muffs. So, Ronnie, what are you doing now, music-wise?
I consider myself retired. I didn't sell my bass or anything, but, so look, if Loverboy calls, I am available. If
it's your first call?
If there's an offer I can't refuse, I'll do it. But
ring-ding-ding-a-ling down the throat?
Yeah, that was my band. That was my band, and we were family, and, I don't know.
What about that early stuff when you were writing about music? Did you ever go back to that?
I would love to. But, I don't know. Music journalism is different now, right? It's all bloggy.
Big time.
Yeah. So it's not, we don't have weekly papers anymore, right? Is there a hard copy of the LA Weekly? I don't think there is.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. I bet you if there is, Fallen James is writing some blurb for a gig.
Exactly. Yeah,
but nobody writes about records anymore.
Yeah, no, I know. It's really is a lost art. People don't have attention spans anymore. And I don't mean to sound like an old man, but it's just different. But yeah, no, I would love to. I've written some liner notes and stuff. I would love to do more of that. So give me a call, people.
Okay, can people find you on the internet? Do you have a website?
I don't have a website, but I'm pretty, I'm on the usual. Well, I'm not on Twitter, but I'm on Instagram and Facebook, and I see mess. People can find me. I don't hide. You know what I mean?
Okay, it's right. BARNETT.
TT,
right. Two T's.
Hey, and I still work in a record store too, so I'm on the front line still. I'm still in the
store.
Yeah, Record Surplus in West LA.
Okay.
Awesome. Used to be on Pico.
I remember.
Yeah, now we're on
for 9 years, Nels Klein worked at the Rhino.
Yes. That's a whole other podcast, man. Record stores of the past.
David Couch.
It's Crouch. Different now.
Crouch. Yeah. He was there too.
I'm like an antique salesman now. You know what I mean? It's like.
Is that what
Price
it is?
And records. Look, yeah, pricing wire records for 70 bucks and stuff.
MSSV, this cat back east who runs a record thing, he says the big dealio is discogs.com.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's like where people can list.
It's the yardstick to see how many dollars, right?
Yeah. No, exactly. You get your, you see what the lowest is sold for, the highest. Yeah. So,
And it's like that because some people are saying, yeah, in the old days you could go to thrift stores and just find this, and they're ruining everything.
Yeah.
It's like the old guy yelling at trains for going too fast.
Yeah. No, now people know what an original copy of Double Nickels goes for, you know what I'm saying? Yeah.
Oh, man. Well, look, if you ever get anything music going and working that bass again and get music together, will you come back on the show?
Absolutely. This is great.
It was beautiful to be here. And totally, this show dedicated to Cam Shattuck.
Thank you.
Yeah, much respect. And you too, Brother Ronnie. Okay.
All right, man. I'll see you soon.
Okay. People, July 20, 2022, this is Watt Peterson. Brother Matt,
yeah.
Keep your powder dry.